Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Regis Resources Half-Year Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. Today's call will be joined by Mr. Jim Beyer, Managing Director, and Mr. Jon Latto, Chief Financial Officer of Regis Resources. I'd now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Jim Beyer. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, Christian. Look, welcome everybody to our half-year results for FY 2020. Just as a bit of an intro, this isn't something that we've done in the past, but we've decided that just to help to flesh out some of the information, give people an opportunity to hear our perspective on our financial results, we thought we'd run with this. As you would know, we have spent time already on the quarterlies going through the physicals in some detail. We'll tend to use this session as an opportunity to talk through more focused on the physicals and the financials and the P&L and so forth. Look, in summary, just kicking off with that, we're very happy with the results. How could you not be? A record net profit of 93 million dollars, up 17%. That sits with a profit margin of a healthy 25%. Our EBITDA up 27% to 186 million, with a margin of 50%. Well, these are a great, from our perspective, they're a great set of numbers, and we're very happy with the way that the first half has gone. Combining that, we've also been able to declare an interim dividend of 0.08 a share. Look, from our perspective, that's a very good performance, a very solid one. We're quite pleased with that. What I'd like to do now is hand it over to Jon, who will go through those financial results in a little bit more detail. Thanks, Jon.
Thanks, Jim. If we turn to page five, we see a summary of some of our key physical and financial information. We had consistent output of approximately 178,000 ounces. We received statutory revenue of 371.4 million at an average price of 2,063 per ounce. Just in case you're wondering why our ounces of output times the gold price doesn't equal our revenue, it's because we had circa 7 million dollars from pre-production assets that we had to offset against our capitalized spend. We had strong gross profit of 144 million, up 16% from H1 FY 2019. We had a strong and record net profit after tax of 93.4 million dollars. Again, that's up 17% from H1 FY 2019. As Jim just mentioned, we have covered our all-in sustaining costs in some detail at the quarterly call, so we won't repeat ourselves now. If there are any questions, more than happy to answer them at the end of the call. If you turn over to page six now, you'll see four charts covering revenue, EBITDA, net profit after tax, and our earnings and dividends per share. It's pleasing to note that across all four of those graphs, what we see is we continue to see a positive rising trend, which is obviously pleasing to see. Over on page seven, we have a cash flow waterfall. Now, that includes bullion on hand, and I'll just walk you through a couple of the various categories. First of all, we see a strong cash flow from operations. Now, that's before income tax, which is shown separately on the waterfall chart of 179.1 million. We see capitalized mining costs of 55 million dollars, and that primarily relates to the capital cost of continuing to move forward with the Rosemont underground, the capital cost of bringing new open pits online at Baneygo, Petra, and Dog Bolters. It also includes pre-strip activities at Duketon South, which primarily relates to pre-strip at Garden Well and Tooheys, as well as deferred waste costs at the new Dog Bolter Coopers satellite pit, as well as at Garden Well, Earliston, and Tooheys. Moving on from our capitalized mining costs, we then see exploration. We continue to see a strong exploration spend of 20 million dollars. Then we move into the other CapEx category. Now, that's approximately 35 million, and that includes the significant TSF expansion that we're undertaking at Garden Well, the airstrip and aerodrome upgrade that we've been doing, and that's substantial as well as underground transformers, haul roads, as well as the acquisition of properties in New South Wales and the camp expansions at both Moolart Well and Garden Well. So next on the waterfall, we see our income tax payments, and obviously we've paid a substantial amount of income tax coming in at $33 million during H1. And then you see the other cost category. Now that's primarily our head office costs as well as, you know, a few other bits and pieces. So what you can see is that even with the significant capital spend that we've incurred over H1, that we've been undertaking, you know, on the Rosemont Underground, the new satellite pits, as well as sustaining and growth PP&E, that our cash balance actually increased from $205 million to approximately $230 million during H1. Now, that's before the payment of $20 million to triple our land holding in the Duke and Greenstone Belt, as well as paying out $40.7 million in dividends. So you can see that we ended H1 with $168.8 million in cash and bullion on hand, which is a great result. Moving on to page 8, it's pleasing to see that Regis has once again been able to declare an interim dividend of $40.7 million. That's 8 cents per share, and that's fully franked. To put that in context, that represents 11% of H1 revenue and 22% of EBITDA for the period. This brings total dividends paid by Regis since 2013 to $448 million, or approximately 89 cents per share. Obviously, we'll continue to assess and review dividends against factors such as operational requirements, planned capex, and the gold price. So having said that, I'll hand back to Jim for a summary of the half year.
Well, thanks, John, and well done to you and the team for pulling that together. Look, in summary, it's been a very pleasing first half. It resulted in, as you just heard, a very solid operational cash generation, which has allowed us to manage this capital intensive phase that we're in with satellites, the satellite startups, to catch up, stripping Rosemont Underground, tailings, airport rejuvenation, if you like, a lot of capital intensive work. It's also allowed us to purchase ground to grow our exploration, and given our knowledge on that prospectivity, we're very excited on the potential of that and how that's going to really add to our future life. Just takes a little bit of time, given that we've only just picked it up. And in amongst that, while also doing that, we've also been in a position to pay a dividend. Bottom line is, I think we're doing what businesses should do. We're financially solid, we're building for the future, and we're also providing returns to our current shareholders as well. All right, well, on that note, I'll hand it back to Christian, and if you've got any questions, we're happy to do our best to help out. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request at any time, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question today comes from the line of Levi Spry from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
G'day, Jim and John.
G'day.
Two questions, please. Firstly, just on guidance and CapEx, particularly CapEx. So CapEx remaining to be spent for the rest of the year, this year. Can you sort of just walk me through that?
Yeah, our guidance on CapEx, on our growth CapEx, is unchanged. It was around $62 million for the year. And we still maintain that.
Okay.
So if you combine that with our all-in sustaining costs, that's how you can, at Duketon, that's how we've provided our guidance on capital spend in terms of quantum.
Yep. Okay. So I can map that up against the 35 probably. Yep. Right.
Yeah.
And just, in terms of like remaining reserves at the two operations, what is the average life of mine strip ratio that we should be looking at for those reserves?
Look, I haven't got those with me right now. From memory, I think they're in the reserve statement, but we'll take that on notice and get back to you, Levi. We just don't have that detail here on a pit-by-pit basis. But basically, what I can tell you is that the phase that we're in at the moment, and I think we've tried to put some colour on this in the past, you know, the overall strip ratio for the past few years has been quite low. There's no doubt that we've had to, you know, with bringing on the satellites, we've had to lift our investment in that front, and you can see it, I think, in the lifting of the strip ratio, even compared to this time last year in that half. And we've also indicated that we expect the stripping ratios that we're running with at the moment are probably going to hold, particularly the ones with all-in sustaining, will hold for another the rest of this year, obviously, because that's in our guidance, and we see it in similar levels next year. It maybe it probably stays around the same. And then as you get, you know, because of the phase that we're in, that will start to drop off, and you'll see the all-in sustaining costs coming off in the, you know, after next year. And obviously that's on off the back of what you'd expect with our current reserve life. When we do add some more in, and I'm fully confident that we will, then obviously that profile will shift a bit, but that will be something that we'll go through in detail at the time. Got to find it first.
Yep, good one. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Morgan from UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Jim and John. Just a question. I guess one of the hallmarks of this financial result is capital being spent to rejuvenate the business, if you like. You know, there's been money put into the airstrip, the tailing storage facility, I think the camp as well you called out. Just wondering if, in principle, going forward, there's anything you'd call out as needing to be rejuvenated in terms of capital spend, or has this half been, you know, the heavy focus on that?
No, look, there's no doubt it's been fairly heavy in this recent, you know, I suppose 6 to 9 months. We've certainly, the airstrip was a double benefit. It did require a fix-up, but at the same time, we decided to do an upgrade to allow us to fly jets for a reasonably modest marginal increase over just giving it a plain old resurface. That obviously is allowing us, as we settle that in, to give us a reduction in our operating costs because of the efficiencies there. The TSF, no doubt, that's a significant thing that you can only kick down the road for so long. So we're getting in and dealing with that. And once it's built, and it should be finalised by the end of this year, that will be it for the current reserves. We don't need to do anything more there. So that's not an ongoing issue. The other element of the Rosemont Underground, the CapEx that we're putting in there, you know, that as well is an initial CapEx phase, because once we start commercial production there, which we're expecting, will be sometime the middle of middle of this year, around the middle sometime, then certainly from an all-in sustaining cost point of view, we will, and I'm not sure whether it's consistent with what everybody does, but we will be counting our ongoing decline development to open up new areas as part of the sustaining CapEx. That's what we're planning to do. We just want to make sure we're being consistent with how others treat the underground costs as well. But you know, that will be not quite so lumpy. So, you know, that's a bit of a long-winded answer, but the short answer is no. At this point, we're not seeing, you know, in the future years, we're not seeing any big numbers that unless they're actually associated with another startup. Say, for example, if Garden Well comes up trumps, then, you know, that'll be another lump, a little bit like Rosemont, really. But of course, that's not being done to sustain; that's being done to grow.
Thank you. And then, just wondering, the latest information that you can disclose on the Rosemont underground ramp up. Obviously, you've got some development ore that's come in during the period, but just wondering, when do you think you'll be in steady production? I think you called out then commercial production mid-year. Is that steady state?
Yeah, look, our expectation was that we'd be getting into stope production in the June quarter. We'll run one or two, maybe, the sensitivity here on is just around the timing. You know, you spend a year developing the mine. You might be a couple of weeks here and there on when you do your first bench stope trials. We're expecting that will be either later this quarter or early in the June quarter, but we're certainly expecting to be in commercial production during the June quarter at some stage. You know, it could be April, it could be May. It's just going to depend on, you know, plus or minus a few weeks. In the grand scheme of things, it's just a bit of movement, but we're certainly expecting to be into stope production in the June quarter and a solid contributor, and then running steady from then.
Thank you. And just a last question on the dividend. How are you thinking about that? So 8 cents and a half, you know, in line with previous halves. Are you thinking about it as a payout ratio, or how do you think about it?
Well, first thing I do is I think it's bloody brilliant. Oops, I don't think I meant to swear on this thing. I think it's brilliant being able to pay a dividend and grow the business. You know, not everybody appreciates that, but we make a profit. We make a pretty good profit on our production level. We make enough cash to be able to continue to grow our business for the next phase, and we also see ourselves being in a position to be able to pay dividends. So I feel pretty happy about that, quite frankly. Do we look at it from a point of view of a payout ratio or anything such as that? No, we don't. I mean, yeah, you look at everything, quite frankly, but we don't have a fixed policy or a fixed valuation metric that drives our opinion. The reality of it is we look at, you know, what's the prevailing gold price, what's our cash generating capability, how does it look like over our forecast for the next 2 or 3 years. Clearly we've got McPhillamys coming down the track at us faster and faster, which is really exciting. We're starting to, just as every week goes by, we get more and more positive progress on that. And I think that, I think that that's obviously something that as we get more confident and clearer in the timing, we start to consider how do we finance that, both debt and cash. So it's all of those sorts of things, you know, the price, the upcoming spend profile, all of those sorts of things that influence our thinking on what the payout should be. I just like the fact that we have the problem of figuring that out. We're in a position to do it.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of David Coates from Bell Potter. Please go ahead.
Morning, Jim. Thanks for the call. You've just basically covered off on the dividend, which is one of my questions. The other one's just a bit boring. D&A up a bit versus PCP as expected, probably a bit more than I expected, though. Can you give us any guidance on where that's heading over the rest of the year?
Well, look, I won't make a comment on whether this is a boring question or not, but I'll pass this on to John.
Well, I think it's a great question, David. the part of the reason for the increase in our D&A is obviously with the new leasing standard that's come on. You know, we've had to recognise, off the top of my head, I think it's $34 million in right-of-use assets, and we have to depreciate those through the accounts, and that's really, you know, the thing that's driven our depreciation charge up. Obviously, our amortisation charge is up because we bought a couple of new pits online during the period.
Yep. And we should be expecting something similar over the second half then? That all sounds like fairly kind of steady sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Thanks very much.
See, I told you it was interesting.
Your next question comes from the line of Matthew Friedman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Sure, thanks. Morning, Jim and John. Just a quick one,
Matthew.
on the newly acquired Duketon ground. Wondering if you can give us a bit of a preliminary update on how your team is going about setting drill targets and assigning exploration dollars to that ground, and how that might flow through to your exploration spend going forward versus the $20 million you spent so far this year? Thanks.
Yeah, good question, Matthew. Look, to be honest, it's relatively early days for us. We had when we picked that ground up, we had multiple areas that were particularly of some interest to us. But as we sat down and really evaluated the full ground, once we got into a little bit more of the detailed data, and I guess the reality is that we sat with the exploration team and said, look, we could go off and find 150,000 ounces of a pit here and 200,000 ounces there, which we're obviously interested in, but that's not the main prize. So we said, you know, we want to know our plan to find a minimum of 1 million or 2 million ounces of deposit, which we firmly believe this ground's got the potential to cop up, if not something, at least to a couple of times bigger than that. So given the way and the degree of exploration on the ground historically, there was a real bit of a back-to-basics type of work that we had to do. We've done I can't remember now, 14,000, I think it is, lag samples that are out, basically taking a whole series, all the early stages, relatively cheap but slightly time-consuming, covering the ground with grab samples from the surface soils. We've also been doing a multitude of auger drilling and air core just to basically build up a good understanding of what's sitting just below the surface. Now that work is progressing now. So, unless you're particularly lucky and jag something on that, which I never bank on, we bank on a scientific approach. It'd be nice to have a bit of luck. But we're building that knowledge up, and what I'm expecting is that next year we'll see us crank up some more on our exploration spend as we start to identify some more than just sticking a few random holes down, deep holes, looking for something. This will be much more structured. Now, how much does that mean at this point? I think we've increased our exploration spend for this second half by another $7 or $8 million. I'd expect that would easily flow into next year, but I haven't got an exact number on that yet because I'm waiting to see. Of course, if you ask an exploration geo, they'd want everything that you've got. We need to sort of balance that with all the other competing nature of capital. But it is progressing. We're doing a lot of grassroots stuff, and we're getting some and that in itself is producing good information to us. We're not, all this grassroots work is not coming up blank. It's actually providing us with a number of targets. And as time progresses, we'll start to give a little bit more guidance on what we're expecting that will mean, both in terms of target potential, but also our expenditure for the coming year or two.
No, that makes sense. Thanks. Thanks very much, Jim.
No worries, Matthew.
Your next question comes from the line of Tim McCormack from Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Mine's just around the gold price inputs in resources and reserves, and if you're going to look at maybe altering that upward as we move through to the mid-year resource and reserve updates, and how sensitive the reserves might be to something like that if you do think about it.
Yeah, hey, Tim. Look, thanks. Good question. Look, at the moment, as I think people would be aware, our reserves are using our long-term reserves are using 1,600 and our resource is 2,000. Look, we do both. You got to be a little bit careful of wildly swinging your reserves around, your reserves assumptions around. Of course, we could be heroes by increasing our our reserves base by increasing the gold price. You just got to be careful that the door that swings open for you can swing around and whack you up the backside if you get some sudden movements. So what we tend to do is we'll continue to run with that price, but opportunistically we keep an eye out for material that we can stockpile for later as we're mining. Certainly looking at at low-grade stockpiles rather than throwing the material off to waste, and we're doing a lot more of that now than we've probably done in the past. We're just going to need to do it in a manner that makes sure that we can easily identify and separate out the, you know, the good grade, the low grade, the lower grade, and the really low grade, so that we don't, you know, if the gold price does stay where it is, we can capitalise on that towards back end of the mine life. Just got to be careful though that, you know, we don't start spending money on things that we hope might happen, and then find out that they don't, and before you know it, you've spent a whole lot of cash for something that doesn't actually get you anywhere.
Yeah, okay, cool. So reasonably unlikely that that 1600 will change much in the mid-year.
For now, yes. That's correct.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay.
Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question today, please press star one. Thank you.
Sounds like we've wrapped it up, Christian.
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do appreciate it. And as always, if you've got any follow-up questions, please drop us a note and we'll do what we can to answer it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.